You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 99. Got the 99er, Steve, and one away from the big 100. Got a big show ahead today, talking about hidden values, looking at guys who are rostered in way less leagues to potentially backfill for injuries, the worst part of fantasy baseball, but very much looking forward to it. Thank you guys, as always, for joining us. You can follow us on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_Verified, and Steve is at Stav8818. Today's Thursday, May 11th, and Steve, very excited to be talking some names with you today. It's still early in the season, man. I'm getting kind of a second wave here. How's it going out there?
Yeah, it's good. It's good. This is a good topic. I know we like to do like trade shows around this time because now people start, you know, getting into trade mode. It's 6 weeks into the season, whatever. But maybe it's a little too early, and I think with just the nature of injuries, especially on the pitching side this year, I don't know if there's like the hard data out there for it yet, but the pitch clock and the fact that like velocities are still the same, so pitchers aren't like easing up even though they have less time to rest between pitches, I think that's what's leading to a lot more of these injuries. Again, there's no study that I've done or that I've seen out there yet, but it just kind of makes sense, like two and two. And then there's also a bunch of hitting injuries, so I think it's nice to sort of do a waiver wire, hidden gem sort of show. Guys that I think we put around like a 30% or under rostership for Yahoo. So in your standard leagues, like these guys should be out there. Cool to highlight some of these guys, highlight lesser roster guys, talk about those guys that we don't normally always talk about. That could potentially be worth an add, especially if you're dealing with some of these injuries. I know, at least in a lot of leagues I play in and a lot of the teams I have, and unfortunately more so in like the weekly leagues where you can't just go out there and
swap it,
there's just a ton of injuries, not only on the pitching side too, but you know, I look at some of my teams in home leagues, things like that, and they're just absolutely devastated. Like, don't like leagues with multiple IL spots that they are rostering guys just because they can't drop them because they're such important pieces that are hurt. So, it's tough out there. So hopefully we could highlight some names. I think this is a fun show with some guys that might not be on like your watch list or anything like that. So it could be some deeper league ideas or deep play ideas for shallower leagues, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think another aspect of that is like, here we are kind of like 6 weeks into the season, and I don't know if you'd agree with this, Steve, but it seems like all of those early rush to add type of guys, like a lot of the prospects have kind of been pushed mm-hmm. up this year where they've gotten called up earlier, and then there's kind of your out of the blue breakouts in a way, like a Brent Rooker, you know, names like that. It seems like they are all kind of, you know, snatched up already. And now you're kind of at the earliest dog days of like the free agency where you kind of look out there and it's, you know, it feels a little ho-hum as we've said on recent episodes about certain guys, but it doesn't seem like outside of like the prospect pitcher palooza, there's been a ton. I mean, even like Matt Mervis prospect, but like a lot of the names we're talking about today, you know, they're just not, these aren't guys that necessarily you have to grab the second you're listening to the show. They're guys who, you know, people tend to look at and they think, oh, it's old news. So it's a little bit deeper dive on, you know, guys who can just kind of help when you're in a pinch, I guess is the way I'd put it. But
it's the time of the year where you go to the wire, you sort by like last 14 or last seven, you refresh the page and then you like look at the names and you just like walk away. You do that right. Five times a day.
And then you're I want somebody else's deposit to the waiver wire?
Exactly. It's like, am I going to add this guy? Yeah. And I know. It's like there's nothing inspiring about it, But maybe we could spark the fire with a few of these guys and give some inspiration.
Yeah, I think some of these we already know that we like. Other ones is going to be more of an assessment because there's a reason these guys aren't rostered, and, you know, 40% or there's a reason their roster ship rate is down in like the 30s, 20%, things of that nature. So, yeah, we got a fun little format. We'll do kind of guys who are injured that you might have been looking to replace, and then kind of tackle it by position eligibility. So we'll go ahead and jump in with outfield, because you might have been hit, like Steve and I both have, by an injured Eloy Jimenez, who just cannot seem to catch a break. Now he has an appendectomy. Finally, when it was looking like he was breaking out of his slump, and, you know, he's dealt with actual muscle issues the past couple years, and now we just get this random appendectomy, and he's going to be out till probably mid-June, if we're ballparking. Tyler O'Neill is another one who is going to be out for another week and a half with the back issue. So for the outfield, and we can brush through these, Steve, but the first one we got to talk about is Jorge Soler. We brought him up in recent shows, probably a few weeks back, but it's worth coming back to because we're in the week that he launched two absolute missiles off of Brandon Pfaadt, moment of silence for all the hype and the shares as well for me personally. So, yeah, went ahead and dropped him in my home league, and really exciting ad, picked up John Gray, who I dropped weeks before. But this isn't about Pfaadt giving up 12 home runs. This is about Soler hitting a 465-foot missile off of him and then turning around and hitting another like 430-foot bomb. Brings Soler up to 9 homers, the 820 OPS that you kind of expect with his pop, some decent counting stats. The batting average is what we always look out for, and right now it's at 233. That's with a 26% strikeout rate, which, I don't know, it feels like that's right beneath the over-under where I would be excited about Jorge Soler, yet he is rostered in just 20% of leagues. I mean, what do we think, Steve? I know we've kind of treaded over this in the past, but we're not too far removed from, you know, when he's looked like a fantasy all-star in recent years. So do you think this roster should be higher? And is this one that you're kind of rushing to add as a replacement for Eloy or a Tyler O'Neill?
I think it probably should be higher. The issue is with how hot and cold Soler runs, and I think that rostership is lower because prior to basically the last few games, Soler was absolutely ice cold, and I know that because I rostered him in a daily league towards the tail end of that really hot stretch where he was hitting a bunch of home runs from like mid-April to
middle weeks
of April, basically. But then from like May on, he basically like didn't have a hit up until like last week. So I think it might just be bad timing because everything else still kind of is good. Like, you want Soler to have that mid to somewhat high 20% strikeout rate, and that's where he's at. And honestly, like, the XBA is 265. I don't know if I would buy all the way up to there, but if he's striking out just, you know, 26% of the time like he is now, he's going to hit higher than 220. He hits the ball that hard. You know, when he had that monster season in 2019, he struck out 26.2% of the time, walked a little bit more at close to 11%, but the K rate's right in that line. The hard hit data is all still there, obviously. It's looking a lot like that year. So honestly, I think that, not saying that there isn't going to be another stretch where it's really hard to roster him because he does absolutely nothing, you know, otherwise. It's not like he runs or not like he's like the singles hitter. Like, when he's hitting, it's going to be doubles and homers.
Decent spot in the lineup, though. So, like, at least some counting, some respectful counting
sure.
stats. I know,
but
it's not a great,
you know,
offense.
That stretch from mid-April to early May, there wasn't really any RBIs or anything because there just was no hits.
Yeah.
But, you know, when he is hitting the ball, he's smoking it. Like, you probably just have to – you're better off, like, benching him the next time he goes through one of those lulls, because there probably will be. But, honestly, I expect some batting average regression. Like, he was at 268 on April 23rd. He dropped all the way down to 212 – 202, excuse me, on May 3rd. And now he's slowly worked his way back up to 235. So, like, yeah, saw how kind of ice cold he went, but it was still worth it, right? Like, now if you held on, you're rewarded with the four home runs in eight games, basically.
Yeah, I think the mental note is Soler is a great ad in, like, a best ball, like, weekly format.
Yeah,
So streaky and up and down that – like, I'd be willing to bump him up multiple rounds, because when he is hot, it's like, you know, top 10 power output in the league. Looking under the hood a little bit at Soler, one thing that kind of jumps off the page is, you know, just on his Savant page, like the whiff rates, looking in the past at breaking stuff, every year from like 2022 to 2021, his whiff rate against breaking balls is a 40%, 43%, 53%, 45%. This year, that's at a 34%, so it's down to, like, a best ever. And at the same time, his exit velocity is at the highest it's ever been against breaking pitches. So the hope is, I know that he's 31 years old, so it's kind of that Yandy Diaz, like, how much are you still developing at 31? But, you know, that could be a path forward to where he's not just doing, you know, all of his damage on fastballs. The 2019 season that you mentioned, Steve, was the one year where he was pretty good against breaking balls, because he had 14 of his, what was it, like 48 home runs came against curves, sliders, etc. So far he's got 3 of his 9 home runs are against breaking balls. So, you know, it's not out of the question that he's kind of working on that kind of hole in his swing, if you will. But, yeah, all the power stats are ridiculous. I mean, 96th percentile on barrel rate. The K rate, like we said, is kind of palatable at 26%. So, yeah, I think of all ones, as long as you can kind of offset it with some average floor, like if you do have some sort of contact specialist that's going to lift your average up, or if that's how you did your build in the draft, I think Soler's, I don't know, kind of a poor man's Kyle Schwarber in a way. So I like this one. I think that it is definitely worth, you know, a backfill, especially for like a Tyler O'Neill, and it can be kind of that, you know, stream and see what happens, as we say. Moving over to our next one, we got a couple Oakland A's on today's rundown, but this one is J.J. Bleda, which is a name that has been on prospect radars for a couple of years. I think Paul Spohr was a J.J. Bleda guy originally, and still just 25 years old, and so far so good, Steve. I mean, what we're seeing from him in a limited run here, where I think it's been, just 8 games, so super small sample size, but so far so good with 3 homers, a 379 average, 419 OBP, and a 12-12 OPS. J.J. Bleda, you know, this is a guy who's, you know, he's not a zero on speed, but he's not really a speed specialist. But, yeah, I think this is a really good one on the rundown, Steve. What are your thoughts on Bleda and potentially some opportunity with the A's?
Yeah, the story with Bleda was that he always had, you know, really good power. The scouting grades on the power was 55 raw, 50 game power. So, you know, pretty good. But hit 20 home runs in the minors last year at AAA, but struck out 27% of the time. That was always, you know, the question. And last year when he called up in his 238 plate appearance sample, he hit 5 home runs, but struck out close to 30% of the time. He always took a walk. He walked 13% of the time last year, and had, you know, walk rates well in the double digits at double A and triple A. But there was concern because, you know, that high K rate would lead to a high average, kind of like, you know, this all or nothing power guy with like pretty good game power, but not enough that you could survive with that K rate, right? Like you need Jorge Soler power to survive with a 28% K rate.
Right.
What's become intriguing is that this year at AAA, in 25 games, 119 plate appearances, he struck out just 12.6% of the time while walking 16.8% of the time. And yes, it's a small sample, but that strikeout rate has carried over, and he's striking out just 19.2% of the time in his limited eight-game sample here in the majors. So I don't know if he struck out today. I'll look it up real quickly, but so that might be even lower.
He did not.
If
two so, for there, five with a homer.
There you go. There today. You go. So that carry is going to look even better once the stats are updated on FanGraphs and Pitchers stuff. So you know, the power obviously has shown. He's got three home runs already. The A's are platooning him, which is kind of frustrating. It's like I saw a tweet about it. I forget who it was. Someone on Twitter, it's like, what are the A's gaining for pinch hitting Jesus Aguilar when a lefty comes in to face JJ Bleday? Like, let him face the lefty. Like, what do they have to lose? And eventually they're going to just trade so many guys that they won't have that option. So I think it's a good opportunity to jump in on board. Like, this was a good prospect. Like, he was a first-round pick, fourth overall in 2019. So there's a lot of, you know, talent in there. He's just 25 years old. Will be 26, I believe, in November of this year. So still just his age 25 season. There's been a lot less surprising guys that have broke out and put it together. And with those K rate gains, like, well, they really might be. He's that. Has that much tool. I mean, to go that high in the draft, no matter who you are, you have to have some tools. So I really like what Bleday is doing and think that he's going to be good enough that the A's are going to say, hey, we need to see what this guy can do against lefties. Like, why not?
Yeah, and against righties, he's hitting cleanup, which is a plus.
The A's offense isn't like I know they stink, but the A's offense isn't, you know, it's scrappy. It's, you know, with Ruiz on top and all those steals, Rooker, oh, yeah, like you were saying earlier, you know.
Yeah, they've played banana peel on a few, like, good starting pitchers this year, mm-hmm, already, where it's like, oh, this is a key matchup. And then, mm-hmm, you know, they kind of get four or five earned runs or whatever it is. Yeah, I like it. I'd forgotten. I was going to segue from Soler to Bleday, but he was with the Marlins. Was he a piece in the puck trade?
I believe it was straight up.
Oh, okay. There you go. Yeah. So JJ Bleday just 5% rostered. I think that's a really good one. And at this time of year, like
that would be cool if like Puck turns into this closer, which he kind of already is. I think he got a 6 save today, and then Bleday broke out. That go like a nothing like a nice win-win trade.
A win-win. It's not a challenge trade.
Yeah.
I love it. And this one, I think it's just worth noting that the upside for this time of year, like this is a guy who's kind of higher ceiling than some of the names that we talked about. So yeah, that makes this one a little bit unique.
Higher than the next two, I think at least.
Yes. Well, this one we can segue with the teammate because Ryan Noda, Steve's boy, as it's well documented on Pitcher List, Ryan Noda just 3% rostered. But this one's close to home, Steve, because this was actually my home league replacement for Eloy Jimenez.
Oh, there you go.
Because we have some of the plate discipline categories with, like, walks and strikeouts. And Noda is very much a points league specialist because of his walk rate. So, you know, he's got some decent pop and, you know, he can hit doubles. You know, he's got, like, I think it's four doubles in his past five games. But the walks are really nice about Noda. And, yeah, overall right now, like, it's looked pretty good. And he's another guy who hits in a good spot in the lineup. So I want to hear your talk on Noda, Steve, because this has been your guy from day one here.
Yeah, a guy I wrote up for bold prediction. I don't know if that's going to come true, and I have to look up what the exact bold prediction was. I think it was like 2020 because his minor league numbers last year were something like he hit 25 homers, had 20 steals, and only caught four times. I think I predicted like, you know, 30-20 or something like that to be super bold. I don't think he'll get there because of the steals, but I mean, hey, if he plays enough, maybe he'll come close to like 20 or 25 homers. He got three already. Need to pick up the pace a little bit there in the homer department, but it's exciting because he's walking 21.1% of the time. So in an OBP league, a league that rewards walks like yours, it's exciting. And on top of that, he's barreling the ball 12% of the time, a 43% hard hit rate, a 113.9 max exit velocity. So the raw power is there. What's surprising is that he's striking out so much and not really chasing. He's got a 20% O swing, which is 96th percentile in the league. But I guess the 5% whiff percentage and 8th percentile K rate kind of goes to show you that, you know, he knows it's like Joey Galloian, right? Like he's not going to swing at any balls, but he's going to miss a lot when he swings, as shown by his 64.6% contact rate. So there definitely is a lot of swing and miss in that game. You would love if that came down to like 28% like it was in the minors last year, because then you're talking about like a 250 hitter with this, you know, a 400 OBP and a guy that could step into a homer or two. And if that happens, then he's like mixed league relevant. But now it might sort of just be a placeholder. I would have expected a few more homers, but maybe he'll step into a few more here. Over the last 2 years in AAA, in the minors, and AA hit 29 homers in 2021 and 25 homers, like I said, last year in 2022. So there definitely is some power in that bat.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's warming up. He's got, like I said, four doubles in the past week. He's got a triple mixed in there, and I think seven walks to three strikeouts in that time, just to, to reiterate. Yeah. So, yeah,
better
bat in second.
The case than two, yeah.
Yeah, and hey, Blade can start knocking him in for some runs. So
That's
our A's special there. Moving over to our next kind of backfill outfielder. It's Luke Raley with the Rays, the Red Hot Rays. And Raley is another guy that has some platoon concerns because that's the Rays. But on top of that, you know, the bat is red hot for Raley. The past couple weeks, a 1383 OPS with four home runs. He does not take a walk like Noda does. But, man, it looks good under the hood for the 28-year-old Luke Raley, who's kind of power prime, big guy, 6'4", 235. And yeah, his homer charts are impressive. All fields, a lot of no doubters, some dead center field. So yeah, I think this is an interesting one. It's just you got to stomach the splits a little bit. It's almost like the, you know, when you justify a Jock Peterson. But Raley right now, a 262 average, a 930 OPS, and eight homers on the season. So the counting stats drag down a little bit because of the platoon factor, but he does have 17 RBIs. And when he is in the lineup, he's batting fifth in that great lineup. So, yeah, Raley is interesting, Steve. I've kind of been scared away because of the platooning, but your thoughts on Raley, just 5% rostered.
The K rate is scary as well, 34.8%. So, and you know, he doesn't have the eye or ability to take a walk like Noda does. But I mean, his barrel skills and ball, bat to ball skills are ridiculous right now. Like every stat cast slider, average exit velocity, max exit velocity, hard hit percentage, it's all like 94% tile and above. And another added bonus, he's been good in the field, 86 percentile average, outs above average, 79 percentile sprint speed. So like, you know, the Rays, it's another reason like for the Rays to get him out there when he does have the platoon advantage, which should be two-thirds of the time. So like, you know, if you have the roster space and like you could add Blade and Raleigh or Noda and Raleigh, like, you're going to have a guy to play mostly every night, right? Like, there's not a good chance that both of them are facing a lefty on a given night. So, yes, that's extremely tough to do with limited roster space, mm-hmm. but that's a good player if you could mash the two of them together.
Yeah, he's kind of this, you know, we like a late bloomer in terms of prospect. He was in the Dodgers organization. He played 33 games with the Dodgers in his debut season in 2021. So that would have been like an age 26 debut. And then just 22 games with the Rays in the majors last year. He struggled both with the Dodgers and the Rays in those 55 games. But in AAA last year with the Rays, he had 14 homers in just 63 games. So I think, you know, prorating him out, at least if you're kind of squinting and saying that's his upside, you know, 25 homers isn't out of the question. If obviously he's on a pace for well beyond that so far in just 26 games, he's got 8, but he's obviously running hot right now. I think it's one of those where if you're in a real pinch, you can you know, stream if it's a week with not a lot of lefties for the Rays. But yeah, I mean, it's a hot bat, and you can kind of deal with the 30% K rate if he's hitting bombs this often. So, yeah, I like it with Raleigh as well. Last one, and this is not a like for like, although it is an outfielder, but just thought it'd be good to bring Lane Thomas back on the rundown because I feel like he was a super popular mm-hmm. sleeper pick going into 2022 last year, leading off for the Nats. This was, I think, before we realized how much of a dumpster fire the Nats offense would become. But now we've all moved on, right? And Lane Thomas is just 12% rostered. However, the surface stats look pretty good. He's hitting 278, 331 OBP, a 722 OPS, a little bit of power speed, 3 homers, 3 steals. And the counting stats aren't terrible, 20 runs, 17 RBIs. He had a home run today, so that's actually up to 4. You know, I don't know that this is a guy that StatCast is going to love because he's kind of high ground ball rate. He sprays to all fields. But it is worth noting that, you know, all of those kind of savant sliders under the hood look pretty dismal. Just curious if there's anything that you're caring about with Lane Thomas, Steve, or if this is, you know, kind of just in the discard pile.
No, I think it's worth our attention. There was a reason why we liked him a lot going into last year. There was the story that, you know, if he could maintain any bit of his barrel rate that he had in 2021, that 7.3%, the speed that he showed, decent plate skills. He walked 14% of the time, struck out just 24% of the time in 2021. Those skills have kind of deteriorated a little bit, but not enough that I think you should just discard him. This isn't going to be a bright red or anything sort of StatCast page, but I think that this is kind of the player that we right off too quickly if sliders aren't to our liking. You know, there is some sign of pop, and the fact that he has 4 home runs already kind of goes to show you that, like, there could be a 15-15 sort of season with an average that isn't going to kill you, that despite there not being like the most amazing underlying skills, that's still useful in our game. So a sort of a long-winded way of saying, like, I wouldn't just write him off just because of data on his StatCast page that doesn't look great despite, you know, a low XBA, and, you know, it could be screaming regression all year, but, like, yeah, his XBA might be 230 all year, but if he hits 280, it's 280. Who cares? Like, right? Like, you know, he's a speedster that hits some ground balls without the shift. You know, there could be a few extra hits in there. So, and it's sometimes we overlook guys on bad teams too. And if he's mm-hmm. leading off all day, every day for this team, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I was going to bring up the shift too, just that ground ball rate with that sprint speed is a nice little combo when mm-hmm. you can't shift like you used to. So it's at least one to watch. I think super deep leagues, 15 teamers, he could be like in, util or five outfield leagues, just because, yeah, he should get some runs there, should help out a little bit with steals. So that's Lane Thomas, and that wraps up our outfield list. Breaking off the rundown a little bit, Steve, because we don't really have an injured third baseman of note, but it could be a stretch like Yoan Moncada, or maybe if you're just suffering with the lack of production from third base. Casey Schmidt is just a name I wanted to bring up. He's also, I think he's played shortstop. He's third base eligible, and I want to say he played some other stuff in the minors. I don't have it right in front of me, but Casey Schmidt, number four prospect from the San Francisco Giants. He got called up and he's looked really good so far. Of course, it's just been like two games. It's more of a watch list guy than anything, but so far, 4-for-8, he homered in his debut. He got a double today as well. So, he's a guy that he's got a pretty good raw power score on FanGraphs. He's a good fielder, so I think that super util. It's not a guy like Edouard Julien where he plays all over because he's bad at defense and they're just trying to cause the least amount of damage. He's a defensive plus, so I think the Giants could be an organization that just kind of use him in that, Brendan Donovan type of role where they just move him around. But, that said, I know you pointed out Steve Crawford's getting ready to come back, so I don't know how much there is on this one, but just think it's a little interesting. I mean, last year, in 2023 in AAA, he was hitting pretty well. He had a .313 average, OBP around like .765. So a little bit of speed as well. But yeah, Casey Schmidt, that's with two T's on the last name if you're searching him, but more of a watch league guy than anything, I think, right, Steve?
Yeah, and I mean, he played in three levels last year, which I think kind of put him on the map prospect-wise. He had 17 homers in high A and finished the year at Triple A. Played at shortstop, I think, exclusively at Triple A this year, but has played third, I think, also outfield a little bit as well. He kept the K rate in check in the minors. Like you said, it was a 7.62 OPS, so nothing jumping off the page, but I mean, he's homered already in his first game, so it's definitely something to keep an eye on. And even I think it'll be telling and might be worth a shot if he isn't the corresponding move when Brendan Crawford's activated. If he does stay up, then I think they may give him a bit of run here, so that's just something to monitor as Crawford sort of comes back. But it's definitely an interesting guy to keep an eye on.
Yeah, because I think they got Brett Wisely in center field right now, and he's like batting .175 on the year. I don't know. Is Haniger back and healthy? That
roster, Haniger just came back. Yeah,
like last week.
I think they're dealing with a few other injuries too. There could be some opportunity there, and if they do want to like play him all over, I mean, he's obviously good enough defensively to play shortstop. At least they believe that. But Darren Ruff just got designated for assignment. Cal Stevenson sent down. There's definitely some opportunity to be had in that Giants depth chart. Like, there's no one that I'm like, they have to get this guy playing time. Like, David VR hasn't been great. Austin Slater too. There's definitely some opportunity in San Francisco. He could take a role, any number of them, and sort of run with it. Yeah. David VR slashing .151, .245, .326. So, yeah, not great.
Yeah, Certainly doing what he can right now to make the argument. So that's Casey Schmidt. And we're going to move on to pitchers, some relievers, and a long list of starting pitchers we're keeping an eye on. But we're going to take our first ad break, and then we'll be right back. All right, so Steve, moving to Jose Alvarado, you know, bummer to see the elbow inflammation. That's always, you know, just seems like the precursor and some pretty scary updates. I don't know if we've heard anything more on Alvarado's status, but, you know, it definitely looks like he's going to be shelved for a while. I guess it does say he doesn't have any structural damage, so he'll be reevaluated. We have to stay tuned, but everyone's looking for closer help in general. So looking for guys, I mean, there's ones, you know, Jason Adam comes to mind that's striking out the side for the Rays. And even once Fairbanks comes back, he's a good option, but he's rostered in, you know, north of 50% of leagues. I think a good one you pulled out here is kind of a speculative one is Mark Leiter Jr. For the Cubs, who appears to be second in line after he just got a save the other night, 28% rostered. What do you see in Mark Leiter Jr., Steve?
Yeah, like you hinted at in the earlier show, like those jobs that we weren't sure of, these guys that you have to scramble to get the closer jobs and ads early in the season, like those guys are already gone, right? Like unless someone starts to like really blow up and lose their job here, there aren't any like undetermined roles. But I think Mark Leiter Jr. has an opportunity here. I think Brad Boxberger is potentially first in line currently. I know Michael Fulmer was attempted to get the job early in the season, but he was really bad, and they quickly pivoted to Boxberger. But I think the most talented arm in this bullpen, in this sneaky kind of good bullpen, I know there's Albert Azulay too. That's another name to keep an eye on, but I think that might be Mark Leiter Jr. right now. He's got a 38.5% K rate. It's backed up by a 15.8% swing strike rate. He's not like your prototypical closer in the fact that he only has a 91.4 mile an hour fastball. And the walks are a bit high at 9.2%. But, I mean, hey, when you're striking out close to 40% of the batters you face and then 42% of the balls in play are ground balls, like you can kind of live with that. And in the past, he has run really, really high ground ball rates, close to 50%. So maybe if that can trend up without killing the K rate too much, you know, there could be some room for he could take a closer job and run with it with those sort of numbers. So I am definitely intrigued by what Mark Leiter Jr. is doing and think that he could be a closer sooner rather than later for Chicago.
Yeah, he's got the splitter that is, if you go out and check out Pitching Ninja, there's him striking out the side multiple times with the splitter this season. So, yeah, the whiff rate is elite. And, yeah, this is an interesting one. I know we talk about it for, you know, more like industry leagues, TGFBI, things like that. You kind of have to, or it's at least smart to get the speculative closer before it's going to cost you like $300 of your FAB budget if you can do it like a week early. And it seems like this week would be a really good one to grab Leiter if he's available in that league. So, yeah.
The worst comes to worst, you throw him in your lineup for a week and you get a bunch of Ks too, right?
Yeah, K's in the ratio. So it's looking good with the 113 ERA, the 0.94 whip. I really like this one. It's a good name. Jumping to starting pitchers, which everyone needs help all the time with starting pitching, but especially for the Max Fried managers out there, as it looks like we just found out with his forearm issue, he's going to miss at least 2 months. And teammate Kyle Wright also will miss at least 2 months, possibly longer because it's the same shoulder he's had issues with before. So definitely a bummer there for Braves fans and also for anybody who rostered those guys. But the most exciting thing on the rundown tonight, probably, Steve, is this. Our show is kind of the Yuri Perez show because Marlins just announced that he's getting called up to start this Friday, and Perez, yeah, if you missed it, he's been pretty much like a top three pitching prospect. His name was thrown around in the same list in the preseason as Andrew Painter, Grayson Rodriguez, and Perez is a guy with just like a top fastball, very good slider as well, curve and changeup, all very good. He has good command. Just last year, from what we saw of him in Double A, 12.19 Ks per nine. And yeah, I mean, this is somebody who should, as long as he doesn't pull a Brandon Pfaadt, come in and basically have the type of strikeout numbers that immediately grab your attention. And this is a guy that right now is just 11% rostered, but you can probably expect by the end of Thursday that number will be up to about 30% rostered in most leagues. So, Steve, what are your thoughts on Perez? I know we spent so much time preseason talking about Painter. I got to admit, this is earlier than I thought Perez would be up. I thought maybe July, August, but he's here.
Definitely earlier, and there was like there was a moment like in spring training where they didn't know where he was being assigned. Like, was it Triple A? Was it Double A? Triple A would be aggressive. Well, I guess it wasn't aggressive enough since they're promoting him directly from Double A. Not that that's not that uncommon anymore. But I would think that Perez is a must add in any league. Like, he's got a 21.2% swing strike rate, a 51.6% ground ball rate. Absolutely, like if you're building a pitcher, like it's Yuri Perez. He's like absolutely massive. He's super, super tall, 6'8". Like has like an easy high 90s fastball, like effortless, repeatable motion, like everything that you want to hear about a pitching prospect. Like this guy has it. You know, the walk rate is 7.7% this year. You know, nothing that's going to kill you or anything like that. So, really, really exciting. And I would, in basically any league, if he's out there, he's worth at the very least a flyer on this first start. Like, because it could be sort of a set it and forget it. And might be, I mean, unless Painter gets healthy, like, this might be the last biggest pitching prospect that comes up, and could potentially be the biggest and most impactful one. Honestly, that's how good this guy's stuff is.
Yeah, 6'8". That is, you know, no question. His extension is probably having that fastball play up even more. So yeah, he gets the Reds this Friday, and then hopefully, you know, if it's smooth sailing, I think they just keep him up. I mean, looking at their rotation right now, he's just 20 years old, so, you know, the innings could be kind of a question mark. But, yeah, right now in that rotation, it's really Sandy, Braxton Garrett, Luzardo, Cabrera, and Yuri Perez as the fifth. So I think, I don't know, it's like Trevor Rogers is on the IL, but honestly, Braxton Garrett hasn't been phenomenal. Like, I think
Edward Cabrera's walking absolutely everybody, so.
Yeah. So, I mean, we talked about Brandon Pfaadt earlier, but it's also worth noting that this is the Marlins. I mean, they're right there with Cleveland when it comes to developing pitchers. So, yeah, this is probably the biggest rush to add of the entire show. So go out, add Yuri Perez if he's available. Next, looking at the Twins, another organization that we've been complimentary of the pitching development that Wes Johnson's been doing there with Pablo Lopez, Joe Ryan. Louis Varland is, you know, back for, you know, we saw kind of the cup of coffee last year, but this year in three starts, he's had a 4.32 ERA, a 1.38 whip, but his most recent start on Tuesday of this week against the Padres caught our attention with six innings, six strikeouts, I think just one earned run against the Padres. Touched almost 99 miles per hour with his fastball, you know, it sat 96, so definitely some velocity for Louis Varland. And yeah, I think for being just 14% rostered, Steve, this is another good one where it's like, I think I've got enough trust in what the Twins are doing and what we've seen from Varland where I'd feel pretty confident at least just seeing where this goes. But what are your thoughts on Varland for the Twins?
I am very, very interested in Louis Varland. The stuff numbers really, really popped in the minors this year. There was some excitement even before he had that start in Yankee Stadium where he struck out 8 batters. He gave up 3 home runs, which kind of tempered the expectations, and then it was just a spot start, so he was sent down. I actually added him in a few leagues before that Chicago start last week, and despite, again, 6 Ks and 4 2/3 innings, it was 4 home runs, and the velocity and stuff wasn't great, but it was a really cold, like, disgusting night in Chicago. And, like, it's an outlier in terms of, like, fastball velocity and just velocity on all of his pitches. You know, if you look at the game log and just the Savant fastball, there was, like, a dip in that second start, and then it goes back up into the third to around where it was. So I think those two starts are more indicative of how good his stuff is. And despite that, he still had the 6 Ks, right? And I know it was kind of like a disappointing matchup because when the White Sox were really, really scuffling and he was a popular stream and didn't get you exactly what you wanted. But I just think the stuff is really, really good, and he is absolutely like a great candidate for anyone that's dealing, and I guess that's everybody dealing with starting pitching injuries. I know that Tyler Mahle was transferred to the 60-day IL. Kenta Maeda is hurt again and has been basically hurt all year long, despite you know, having an impressive start, his first start back, and there being some excitement with him coming back from Tommy John, but he can't catch a break. He's been hurt like every which way. So I think Varland is going to get some run here, and we see what the Twins can do with their pitchers. They get the most out of them, and I think Varland has a lot of stuff, and that could go even further with how good the coaching staff is there in Minnesota. So I really, really like Varland as more than just like a streamer. I think he could be a good long-term play.
Yeah, not to throw cold water on it, but that might be what you sign up for. I mean, it gets good this weekend. Like if you're in a daily transaction league, on Sunday he gets the Cubs at home, which is, I would say, a plus decent matchup.
Yeah.
And then after that, unfortunately, he goes at the Angels and then home against the Blue Jays. So it gets a little bit tougher from there. But nonetheless, I think with the strikeout
maybe
upside,
maybe that'll mean he'll be available, right? If there's not like these juicy matchups. You know, could be dropped if they're like, oh, I don't want to start him versus the Blue Jays. But honestly, with his stuff at home, I'm probably going to be starting him there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good note, that if he gets dropped because he gets roughed up by the Angels, for instance, it, you know, take a look at the strikeouts, the walks, see if he's, you know, still got kind of the stuff and the swing and miss that you're talking about, and it could be a nice opportunity to buy back in on Louis Varland. Moving along to another pitching option, and Clark Schmidt is a guy that you liked, Steve, coming into the season, and it's, you know, there's been some volatility, but recently, granted, it was against the Athletics, 6 innings, a win, 7 strikeouts, just a 3 ERA and a 1.17 whip. And what really caught my eye for Clark Schmidt is right now he is 13th overall in PLV, which, you know, I feel like the stuff is there. And somebody on Twitter, I forget who had it out there, but they mentioned that, like, they could see Brandon Pfaadt turning into a Clark Schmidt where it's like good stuff, but the occasional rough ratios by the end of the season, so on and so forth. But yeah, Clark Schmidt, just 20% rostered. You know, the K rate is there at 26.2%, and the slider gets good whiffs, 2,900 RPMs on that, which is way above, you know, that's up there. I mean, anytime you're flirting with 3,000, that's like one of the nastiest sliders in terms of movement. And he doesn't walk the yard either. I mean, he's got a sub 7% walk rate. So Clark Schmidt's probably, without even looking, in terms of K-minus BB guys that are out on the free agency and certainly rostered under 30%, he's got to be a leader. The problem is he's just been so hittable. So curious your thoughts on Clark Schmidt. It looks like if he can locate a little bit better, because a lot of the stuff that you want to see, like high high fastballs or high sinkers, and then, you know, the low breaking stuff, he leaves a lot over the middle of the plate, and it seems like that might be hurting him. But I'm pretty interested in just the strikeout and walk numbers. So do you think there's anything here with Schmidt?
Yeah, and the models all love him. I know, like, Stuff Plus loves him. Eno was big on him in the preseason. And, like, the models still pop. PLV loves him, obviously. And just by the stuff and the strikeout and walk numbers, like, this isn't a 5 ERA guy. Like, you know, I know the X stats still are pretty good, are pretty ghastly, like a 5.97 X ERA, but... I mean, when you're giving up that much contact, at least through the first few starts, and have a 20% homer to fly ball rate, like, yeah, those aren't going to be good. But I think he could be, like, what his xFIP says he is, a 3.79 ERA guy. And if he has a high 3 ERA and 11 strikeouts per nine, like, that's a good fantasy starter. That's a good back-end fantasy starter with Ks. A lot of those times, those back-end fantasy starters don't get you the strikeouts. Clark Schmidt will get you the strikeouts. So I still like it. I've streamed him recently and dropped him. I'm kind of kicking myself for dropping him. But, you know, I think there could be some good stuff in here. I know Nick kind of said he can kind of move it on. His next matchup, I don't think is great, but I don't know if we're gonna get like the absolute clunkers and like weak killers like we had with regularity in the past. So I still like Clark Schmidt and I'm a believer. I think you know, a 380 BABIP, a 69% left on base percentage, and a 20% homer to fly ball ratio are all due for some regression to better numbers.
Yeah, he's got the Rays next, and then it's at Cincinnati. So, you know, it's not great matchups, but I think if he gets through the Rays and it looks anything like his past couple starts, because, you know, he had what was it? No, zero earned against the Guardians two starts ago, and then the last time out against the A's, just two earned runs in six innings. But yeah, he's gotten eight strikeouts against the Blue Jays, eight strikeouts against the Rangers this season. So nice little K streamer, if nothing else. But I'm interested. This is stuff that's harder to find on the wire. If he can settle down and get the ratios in check, like you're saying, like high threes, low fours even, I think you'd take with the fact that he doesn't really issue that many walks. So, yeah, that's Clark Schmidt, 27 years old. I think, you know, we're still kind of learning about Clark Schmidt, that he hasn't really started that much leading up to this point. I mean, he has eight starts this season, and prior to this season, he only had five starts. So this is, yeah, all a little bit finding his feet with the Yankees. So I'm interested. The next one, I don't even love throwing this out, Steve, because I feel like we've moved on from Mike Clevinger as a fantasy community, and certainly he comes with his issues off the field and some nonsense on the field with his walk-up music, not to get into that. But the past couple outings did catch my attention because Clevinger reintroduced the cutter. And while the pitch itself has not gotten great results with the cutter, which was a pitch he had in the past, but he went away from it at the start of the year, it did kind of unlock some good results, whether or not it was directly because of the cutter, but the slider really played up for him. He's gotten some really good whiffs in his past two outings, 15 strikeouts in 11 innings. He's still walking quite a bit of guys, Clevinger. But he has the Royals as this podcast releases. He's pitching against the Royals on Thursday. So that is a start that I'd want to watch and see. I know it's a light matchup, but are the walks in check? Is this another one where he's getting 7-8 strikeouts? And if it is, you know, we've obviously seen Clevinger in the past be a fantasy stud. So, you know, it's a long time removed from that. And the White Sox haven't been great. Giolito's kind of riding the ship, but, you know, Cease and Lynn, it's been rocky. So I'm not looking at that organization the same way with we are with the Twins and the Marlins and everything. But I don't know. Clevinger just 26% rostered. For him to just be sitting out there with the history that he has and kind of the slider generating whiffs, I'm at least intrigued here, Steve. I don't know if you are or if you're just out altogether.
Maybe I would consider him as a streamer now. I mean, when he was that elite starting pitcher, he was throwing 95.5, averaging with the fastball. It's, last year was down to 93.5. This year it's back up to 94.6. Still a mile per hour off. And even more so, what's more concerning is the swing strike rate is just at 8.4%. He was running 12, 15% when he was that really good fantasy ace, basically. That he was in Cleveland. So he's still a long way off of that. I guess with this recent news and the cutter and the recent good results, I would consider him as a streamer, but not much more than that. Like, the Royals have been kind of a bit, they've had some offensive explosions, including on Wednesday night versus Lance Lynn. So that might be a bit of a trap game. I would be a little scared to throw Clevinger out there. Like, I could see crooked numbers on his line basically any given night. So I guess I'm talking myself out of it here.
Yeah, the last two outings, 14 whiffs and 12 whiffs. So that's gone up a little bit since then. Yeah. But it, the smallest of sample sizes.
I guess that goes to show you what it was before that, right?
Very, very
basically
rough,
no whiffs. Yeah.
So yeah, see what happens with the Royals. I think watch list more than anything, but yeah, good points. And moving right along to Chase Silseth, who should replace Jose Suarez this weekend with the Angels. And Silseth, I want to say we saw...
Last year,
seven starts. Yeah. Not great. But this year, Steve, I think there's a little bit more reason for optimism. Talk about Silseth. This is a guy that is available in all leagues and probably one that you could kind of get on the cheap in some of the NFBC leagues as well.
Yeah, in the Discord and Pitcherless Discord, a lot of the guys call him Chase Filthseth, just because the stuff is good. And there was some excitement about him last year. The results obviously weren't great, but this year in 20 innings in four AAA starts, he has a .9 ERA, a .9 WHIP, 20 strikeouts in 20 innings. And a 60.9% ground ball rate. He's got a mid-90s fastball. This stuff's never been a question. Like, this guy is a legit good prospect with good stuff that deserves your attention despite the poor results last year. There's easily a way that he's one of the better starting pitchers on the Angels. So I could see him carving out a role, even if Suarez is like a minimum stint or anything like that. He definitely has more skills than Jose Suarez. So worth a watch list at least. And honestly, I would consider streaming him versus Cleveland this weekend.
Yeah, I'm trying to take a look at what game they actually have him lined up for. I don't know if you have that, Steve.
I believe he pitched Monday and went like three innings, which is kind of like, that's what they did with like Luis Ortiz. Like, they had him do his regular start, just a few less innings so that he could be ready to go. So they haven't announced anything, I don't think, official yet, but I think Suarez's turn was coming up this weekend, and he could slide right in that spot.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think if you look at their upcoming matchups, he might get the Orioles on the road, or he might get the Twins at home, which isn't a terrible matchup there for next week. So, yeah, really, really good note there, especially with what he's doing in the minors. And, yeah, Filseth, 2% rostered, definitely one for the watch list. Steve, this is a guy that's probably been dumped from a lot of teams, and there might be quite a bit of value that we'll get to next, but we are going to take our final ad break, and we'll be right back. Matt Strom, Steve, is the name, and it's one that I feel like we were in on for years and years, and then out on, and then boom, with the Phillies, he just kind of breaks into this super pitcher, and then he gets moved to the bullpen, and now it's kind of like everyone is just dropping Strom. So in terms of what we've seen this year, yeah, there's been some hiccups with the ratios, but the strikeout numbers have been incredible for Strom. And the whole time I was just thinking, like, they have to find a way to keep him in the rotation, but they didn't. So even with his 40 Ks over just shy of 29 innings and at 3.14 ERA, a 0.94 whip, Strom's now in the bullpen. So are you viewing this as just kind of a take the ratios and strikeouts in the bullpen until he gets back into the rotation? Or what are your thoughts with Strom right now?
I think so, and I think it's take the ratios, take the strikeouts until he's basically back in that rotation. Like, I think this might be a move to sort of keep him healthy, a way to, you know, that no team's really been able to do before. Like, the highest he's thrown in the major league level innings-wise is 114 with San Diego back in 2019. And, you know, the results weren't nearly as good as what we were getting last year when he was in more of a bullpen role with Boston, and then this year in the starter, and then that one relief appearance. I could see him being like a 2-3 inning guy for a stretch, coming back into the rotation if and when there's another injury, and then, you know, playing around with starts around the All-Star break, things like that, maybe another stretch where they move him to the bullpen just to sort of keep him healthy, because that's sort of always been an issue with Strom. You know, the stuff's always been good, but it finally looks like it's all coming together, and maybe if they all, this is more just an innings play and a way to keep him healthy and eventually insert him back into the rotation. Like, it's sort of the perfect guy to slide into like an RP spot, collect some good innings and ratios. He even got a save in his first relief appearance. You know, it was one of those where it became like a safe situation, or you know, he came in a closer game and finished it out, so they didn't go to a reliever on the end. So, you know, there could be some sneaky value, and I think it's sort of a bet that, hey, this guy was good for them in the rotation. They have some loose ends as far as like Bailey Falter at the end of their rotation that he should be better than. I know Ranger Suarez is back, but there's been some up and downs for him as well too. So if that doesn't go as smoothly as they hope, maybe they'll turn to Strom and put him back in the rotation sooner rather than later.
Yeah, Strom, I mean, the slider that he kind of introduced or tweaked this year has been a game changer for him, where he's thrown it. It's his second most common pitch he goes to, and a really nice whiff rate on that. Yeah, like you mentioned, Falter has got to be the one that would make way. I mean, he has just not looked good. His past couple outings, ERA over 10. He doesn't have the strikeouts that you get with Strom. And I could see that happening. I think the one other note is Painter's timetable is still sometime in July. So, you know, between now, you know, it's probably like the next 6 or 8 weeks. Now, all of that's pending that Painter comes back healthy, but the reports have been that once Painter is ready, they want him pitching with the Phillies, not at AAA. So that would be one more mouth to feed in that rotation. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think Falter makes way, and you know, Taijuan Walker is in the fifth slot in that rotation. So I think he proved that he can do the job if they give him the opportunity. And I think it makes sense to try to just get the ratios and strikeouts, especially in those deeper leagues. So I like that there for Strom. Anything else to add there, Steve?
No. I mean, Painter just started throwing from like 120 feet, and like the next step then is mound work. So still a ways away there too, just as a note.
Yeah. Nope. Good point. I think we'll be celebrating Painter Day, Steve. I know I've got him
Hope
in a few
so.
Leagues.
Hope so. Hope
if,
so.
If it comes. Yeah. Hope so. The last two is kind of in our miscellaneous bucket here, but Francisco Alvarez, obviously a really big prospect, and you know, kind of the Gary Sanchez vibes, not to curse it, but anytime you...
Hey, the Mets signed Gary Sanchez to a minor league deal yesterday, I believe.
Well, there you go. It's karma. But Alvarez, we looked at the catcher slot or the catcher eligibility and just his ability to crush baseballs. Last year in Double A and Triple A across 112 games, he hit 27 homers. You know, the average kind of hovered around like 250, 260. But for a while, the Mets called him up and they just weren't playing Alvarez. And now he's been getting run at catcher. They said that they weren't going to use him at DH, and they have yet to do that. But he's just coming off of a two-homer game. I think he's played like five of the last six games for the Mets. So Francisco Alvarez, this one's less of a injury replacement and more just, you know, it's a notable one because he's just 14% rostered. And, yeah, I mean, as we record tonight, he went 0 for 3. He did get a walk in there. But overall with Alvarez, Steve, I think this is just such a big prospect that, you know, could walk into 25 homers if he had the playing time. How do you kind of handle this? Like, it doesn't seem like catcher one or one catcher leagues, he's necessarily a starter yet, but he's probably right on the fringe, right?
Yeah, and I think that his playing time is only going to increase. Like, the Mets are having such a rough go of it on all ends. You know, with the Scherzer injury, their lineup hasn't been great. Outside of, you know, Alonso, basically, who was cold for like a week or two, but I think his homer now back-to-back games. So they need Alvarez's bat in the lineup. Like, they're not going to get any production from, like, Tomas Nito, and, like, he can't be... The difference in you know, game calling and fielding, and Alvarez is actually, I think, rated a really good framer, which is kind of surprising. You thought of him as this bat-first guy, but I think it's only a matter of time before Alvarez takes the starting job and runs with it. And with that will come the power. Like, there's no question that he'll contribute enough with the bat if he gets this full-time role. So, you know, in a weekly fab league, if he's out there, like, this would be the time to get him on the cheap where you're sort of betting on him eventually getting that starting role full-time. And I think he will. I think it's just a matter of time before they start playing him more and more.
So there you go. That's Francisco Alvarez. Definitely a power surge if you need it, and just 14% rostered. Moving to our last one, Jordan Diaz, who is coming off of a 3-home run game against the Yankees. I feel like every major stat we've talked about this whole year has been against the Yankees. But Jordan Diaz, just 22 years old and hits 3 home runs in a game, and he crushed a handful of these. I mean, 106 mile per hour off the bat. What's crazy is that none of the 3 home runs were even his hardest hit of the season. You know, it's an Oakland A, and it's a guy that we haven't heard a whole lot about. But at this point, in 16 games, Jordan Diaz, second baseman, has a 267 average, 4 home runs, 8 RBIs. And, I mean, overall, Steve, I think we have to at least assess if this guy could be, you know, a watch list or a guy that we want to slot in, because he's second base eligible. I think in some leagues, I thought that he had some third base eligibility as well. But Diaz is a name that I think we've got to break down a little bit to see what the interest level is. Your thoughts on the young second baseman for the A's?
I think there was some interest in him last year when he got called up. He sort of broke out a bit. He hit 19 homers across 2 levels, had a 120 WRC plus, a double A, a 129 WRC plus, a 928 OPS, a triple A. I think that might be that triple A definitely is the PCL for Oakland, so might be inflated there, but still 29% better than league average, and struck out just 12.5% of the time. So it's always intriguing when you have that sort of low strikeout rate, and power combination, which, you know, you might have here. He's still striking out, 29% of the time. He hasn't walked yet, in his 42 plate appearances. So that's a bit concerning, but, you know, 4 homers and 42 plate appearances is no joke. So, the power is legit. It's definitely worth a watch. And again, I mean, this is the theme of the episode. Like, there's some intriguing stuff fantasy wise going on in Oakland. I know everything going on with their stadium and the move and what they're doing to keep fans away. But there's still some interesting guys here. It just goes to show you that, right, this is what made the A's really good, is because they had a good team and then would find a guy like Jordan Diaz or something like that that they could plug in, right? Like, remind you of the heydays of the Oakland A's in the mid to late 2010s, where they had some really good teams and, you know, had good player development with them. So there's like traces of this good player development in Oakland, despite everything else going on. So definitely at least a watch list candidate. And in deeper leagues, like, you know, if you lost like a Ramon Urias or something like that, this is a great fill-in in leagues like that.
Yeah, like you mentioned, everything in AA, AAA last year looked great across both levels in 120 games, had 19 homers and hit .326. So I know it's the minors, but that has my attention as a 22-year-old. And yeah, they're playing in an empty stadium, so maybe it's an easy transition from the minors to playing in Oakland right now. Just feels like
the same stuff.
But yeah. That rounds us out. So Jordan Diaz and Francisco Alvarez were those last two. On the pitching side, we talked through Yuri Perez, which we view as an absolute must-add in any league size. Louis Varland, very interesting with the strikeout numbers, a little bit of a tough couple starts ahead after this Sunday against the Cubs. Clark Schmidt with the K-minus BB, looking enticing, but, you know, a little bit of concerns on how easy he's been to hit. Clevinger, maybe not as much, but just keep an eye on if the strikeouts continue to climb. And Chase Silseth, I think, is a really good one, Steve, that you pointed out, with just 2% rostered, and we should see him this weekend against Cleveland. And he's been great in the minors. And then Matt Strom, more of just kind of that, bullpen piece until the talent kind of emerges for the pitchers. But that wraps up chapter two here for the hidden values. Just in general, Steve, I mean, how the league's going? How's the fantasy season going for you?
Yeah, it's going all right. I wish I was doing better in some of my industry and weekly leagues. I think, I don't know, maybe I say this every year and just never learn my lesson, but I think a real key in weekly leagues is just maximizing on playing time. Like,
yeah,
you know, like I shouldn't, you know, there's a league where, I think I'm stashing, like, I had Verlander or something and then have to stash
like a McKenzie.
A Kyle Wright, something like that. I think, honestly, the move might be to cut those guys. Like, if a big pitcher gets hurt and it's more than a minimum stint on the IL, it might not be worth it because they have to build up and all that. Like, in a daily league, you're able to add a streamer, drop a streamer, add a streamer the next day. You can't do that in weekly leagues. Like, you have to add two start pitchers and, you know, everyone's bidding on the same two start pitchers. It's really, really hard to maximize that playing time, and I think that's kind of what you have to do. So lesson learned already, and maybe I'll start to do that with my fab rather than spend on some big bucks, but use some smaller bids for some better streamers to catch up in some categories there. But our best ball's not doing too bad. All right, I'm doing all right in my turf league. I think I'm in fourth, a few points behind first. And the home league team's got a strong start so far this year. So but we're in the thick of it, and it's been a lot of fun so far.
Yeah, as long as you're not out, you know, this time of year. There's still, what are we?
TGFBI, I think I am.
Fifth of the way through.
Yeah. It's still a long, long way to go.
Love it. Well, thank you guys for tuning in. Next week is the big episode 100. We're going to have a fun rundown for that. Still some actionable advice, but definitely make sure that we can kick back, look back at the 100 episodes that were, and you know, just talk about some WAF favorites. So we appreciate you guys joining for any and every episode, but that rounds us out for episode 99, talking about hidden values. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_verified, and Steve is at Stav8818. That's it for now. We'll talk to you guys next week, but thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks for listening, guys. Later.